Hello, I'm Helen, and today I'll be reading A Good Girl's Guide to Murder by Holly Jackson. Chapter 1. Pip knew where they lived. Everyone in Fairview knew where they lived. Their home was like the town's own haunted house. People's footsteps quickened as they walked by, and their words strangled and died in their throats. Shrieking children would gather on their walk home from school, daring one another to run up and touch the front gate. But it wasn't haunted by ghosts, just three sad people trying to live their lives as before. A house not haunted by flickering lights or spectral falling chairs, but by dark spray-painted letters of scum family and stone-shattered windows. Pip had always wondered why they didn't move. Not that they had to, that they hadn't done anything wrong. But she didn't know how they lived like that, how the Sings found the strength to stay here. Here in Fairview, under the weight of so many widened eyes, of the comments whispered just loud enough to be heard, of neighborly small talk never stretching into real talk anymore. It was a particular cruelty that their house was so close to Fairview High School, where both Andy Bell and Sal Singh had gone, where Pip would return for her senior year in a few weeks when the late summer sun dipped into September. Pip stopped and rested her hand on the front gate, instantly braver than half the town's kids. Her eyes traced the path to the front door. It was possible this was a very bad idea. She had considered that. Pausing for just a second, Pip held her breath, and then pushed the creaking gate and crossed the yard. She stopped at the door and knocked three times. Her reflection stared back at her, the long, dark hair sun-bleached a lighter brown at the tips. The pale white skin, despite a week just spent in the Caribbean, the sharp, muddy green eyes raced for impact. The door opened with a clatter of a falling chain and clicking locks. "Hello?" he said, holding the door half open, with his hand folded over the side. Pip blinked to break her stare, but she couldn't help it. He looked so much like Sal, the Sal she knew from all those television reports and news pictures, the Sal now fading from her memory. Ravi had his brother's messy black side-sweeped hair and thick arched eyebrows and oaken-hued skin. "Hello?" he said again. Pip faltered. He'd grown even taller since the last she saw him. She'd never been this close before, but now that she was, she saw that he had a dimple in his chin, just like hers. Sorry, hi. She did an awkward half wave, which she immediately regretted. Hi? Hi, Ravi, she said. You don't know me. I'm Pippa Fitzamobi. I was a few years below you at school before you left. Okay. I was just wondering if I could borrow a second of your time. Well, not only a second, we're already way past that. Maybe a few sequential seconds, if you can spare them. Oh god, this was what happened when she was nervous, where his words spewed out, unchecked and overexplained until somebody stopped her. Ravi looked confused. Sorry, Pip said, recovering. I mean, I'm doing my senior capstone project at school, and what's a capstone project? It's kind of like a senior thesis you work on independently, alongside normal classes. You can pick any topic you want, and I was wondering if you would be willing to be interviewed for mine. What's it about? His dark eyebrows hugged closer to his eyes. It's about what happened 5 years ago. Ravi exhaled loudly, his lip curling with what looked like anger. Why? He said. Because I don't think your brother did it, and I'm gonna try to prove it. Pippa Fitzamobi. July 30th, 2019. Capstone Project Log Entry 1. Our capstone project logs are supposed to be for recording any obstacles we face in our research, our process, and the aims of our final reports. Mine will have to be a little different. I'm going to record all my research here, both relevant and irrelevant, because I don't really know what my final research report will be yet, or what will end up being important. I will just have to wait and see where I am at after all my investigation, and what essay I can bring together. I'm hoping it will not be the topic I proposed, Miss Morgan. I'm hoping it will be the truth, what really happened to Andy Bell on April 18th, 2014. And if, as my instincts tell me, Salil Sal Singh is not guilty, then who killed her? I don't think I'll actually solve the case and figure out who murdered Andy. I'm not deluded, but I'm hoping my findings might lead me to reasonable doubt about Sal's guilt and suggest that the police are mistaken in closing the case without digging further. The first stage in this project is to research what happened to Andrea Bell, known to everyone as Andy, and the circumstances surrounding her disappearance. From the first national online news outlet to report the event, Andrea Bell, 17, was reported missing from her home in Fairview, Connecticut, last Friday. She left home in her car, a white Honda Civic, with her cell phone, but did not take any clothes with her. Police say her disappearance is completely out of character. Police began searching the woodland near the family home this past weekend. Andrea, known as Andy, is described as white, 5 feet 6 inches tall, with long blonde hair and blue eyes. It is thought that she is wearing dark jeans and a blue cropped sweater on the night she went missing. Other sources add more detail as to when Andy was last seen alive, and the time frame in which she is believed to have been abducted. Andy Bell was last seen alive by her younger sister, Becca, around 10:30 p.m. on April 18, 2014. This was corroborated by the police in a press conference on Tuesday, April 22nd. Footage taken from a security camera outside the bank on Fairview's Main Street confirms that Andy's car was seen driving away from her home at about 10:40 p.m. According to her parents, Jason and Dawn Bell, Addie was supposed to pick them up from a dinner party at 12:45 a.m. When Andy didn't show up or answer any of their phone calls, they started reaching out to her friends to see if anyone knew of her whereabouts. Jason Bell called the police to report his daughter missing at 3 a.m. Saturday morning. So whatever happened to Andy Bell that night happened between 10:40 p.m. and 12:45 a.m. Here seems like a good place to type up the transcript from my interview with Angela Johnson. Transcript of interview with Angela Johnson from the Missing Persons Bureau. Angela. Hello. Pip. Hi, is this Angela Johnson? Speaking. Yep. Is this Pippa? Yes, thank you so much for replying to my email. Do you mind if I record this interview for my project? Yeah, that's fine. I'm sorry, I've only got about 10 minutes. So, what do you want to know about missing persons? Well, I was wondering if you could talk me through what happens if when someone is reported missing. What's the process and the first steps taken by the police? When someone is reported missing, the police will try to get as much detail as possible so they can identify the potential risk to the missing person and an appropriate police response is made. They'll ask for a name, age, description, and the clothes they were last seen wearing. The circumstances of their disappearance, if going missing is out of character for this person, details of any vehicle involved. Using this information, the police will determine whether this is an at-risk missing persons case. And what circumstances could make it an at-risk case? If they are vulnerable because of their age or disability, or if the behavior is out of character, which indicates they could have been exposed to harm. So if the person is 17 years old and it is deemed out of character for her to go missing, would that be considered an at-risk case? Absolutely, when a minor is involved. So how would the police respond? Well, there would be an immediate deployment of police officers to the location the person is missing from. The officers will get further information about the missing person, such as details of their friends or partners, any health conditions, financial information in case they try to withdraw money. Police will also need recent photographs and might take DNA samples, in case they're needed in subsequent forensic examinations. and with the consent of the homeowners, the location should be searched thoroughly to see if a missing person is concealed or hiding there, and to establish whether there were any further evidential leads. So immediately the police are looking for any clues or suggestions that the missing person has been a victim of crime. Absolutely. If the circumstances of the disappearance are suspicious, officers are instructed to document evidence early on, as though they were investigating a murder. Of course, only a very small percentage of missing persons case turn into homicide cases. And what happens if nothing significant turns up after the initial home search? They'll expand to search the immediate area. They'll question friends, neighbors, anyone who might have relevant information. If it's a teenager who's missing, we can't assume the reporting parents knows all of their children's friends and acquaintances. Here's a good point of contact to establish other important leads. You know, any secret boyfriends, that sort of thing. And a press strategy is usually discussed because it appeals for information in the media, can be very useful in these situations. So if it's a 17-year-old girl who's gone missing, the police would contact her friends and boyfriend early on? Yes, of course. Inquiries will be made because if the missing person has run away, they're likely to be hiding out with someone close to them. And at one point is a missing person's case, do police assume they are looking for a body? Well, time-wise, it's not... Oh, Pippa, I have to go. Sorry, I've been called into my meeting. Oh, okay. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. And if you have more questions, just shoot me an email and I get to it when I can. Will do. Thanks. I found these statistics. 80% of missing people are found in the first 24 hours, 97 are found in the first week, and 99 of cases are resolved in the first year. That leaves just 1%. 1% of people who disappear are never found. And just 0.25% of all missing persons cases have fatal outcome. So where does this leave Andy Bell? Floating incessantly somewhere between 1% and 0.25%. Even though Andy has never been found and her body never recovered, most people accept that she is dead. And why is that? Sal Singh is why. This has been Helen and A Good Girl's Guide to Murder. I hope you enjoyed this first Chapter Friday episode.